Emmy Perez is the author of Solstice, a member of the inaugural cohort of Canto Mundo Fellows, and she's also a member of the Macondo Writers Workshop for Socially Engaged Writers. In 2009, she was the recipient of the Alfredo Cisneros del Moral Foundation Award. She's originally from Santa Ana, California, and a graduate of the University of Southern California and Columbia University. Over the years, she's facilitated writing workshops in juvenile and adult detention centers in New Mexico and Texas. Currently, she's a professor at the University of Texas in the Rio Grande Valley, where she teaches in the Creative Writing Program and the Mexican-American Studies programs. She's lived on the Texas-Mexico border from El Paso to the Rio Grande Valley since the new millennium. Emmy Perez, welcome to Words on a Wire.
Thank you for having me, Tim.
Absolutely, and congratulations on this beautiful, beautiful book. And I mean that in so many ways, you know, with the river on our face. Congratulations.
Thank you. I'm really happy. I even just hearing your congratulations, I want to cry because this has been a really long time coming. So I'm really happy. Thank you for having me.
And you know what? And it feels that way. Like, I mean, that's one of the questions I wanted to ask you later, but maybe we'll just talk about it right now up front, you know, which is in reading the poems, they're sprawling, a lot of free verse, you know, they're spread across the page. And yet, and in some areas, they're very sparse. They're kind of like a river itself. You know, they converge and then they expand and then they retract. And yet throughout all of that kind of fluidity, you know, I get the sense throughout the whole book that you labored over these poems, over each and every single word that went into this book. I get that sense about it. So how long have you been working on this?
I think that I started in about 2008. And as you know, it takes a while to publish a book. And so it was about 2 years to publish it. Wow. So I would say about 6 to 7 years.
Wow.
And yeah, and you know, other people say, well, your last book was published in 2003, so it seems like an even longer time. But I was writing a lot of poems in between that time. I guess it was like a 5-year period.
Right.
But they just didn't make it into the book. And, you know, I think I was going through some aesthetic changes, life changes, but also aesthetic changes in the way that I was writing the poems. And so I think it was a learning process, and I just had to say, you know, those poems don't fit.
Right.
So I would say it was about 6 to 7 years to write the book. Yeah.
Yeah, it feels that way, too. And I mean, you know, it's what is it here? I have the book in my hand. It's about 80, 90 pages long, 95-ish. And yet, you know, for being a very sort of, I mean, just a real kind of wonderful collection of poetry, you can tell that, like I said, every word, every bit of, you know, hard work that went into this is obvious throughout the book. The poems are beautiful. They're insightful. They're rich. Even when they're sparse, they're rich. One of my favorite poems I can just think of right now is Border Twins Confluences, where you know, you're obviously kind of leaping landscapes across the Southwest, but also you're recalling, I think, maybe ancestral books or texts that came before you or before us, like Canicula, or, you know, with his pistol in his hand, and Bless Me, Ultima. Like, you know, you give a nod to all of these. Tell me a little bit about that poem.
Okay, so that poem started off just as like talking about the river and its confluences, and it was really a last-minute change that I made. I think I had only mentioned Aristeo Brito's book originally, and so I had El Diablo in Texas, right. And then somebody suggested, hey, why don't you add more titles, and I thought it was a great suggestion.
Yeah.
Because I'm really sort of honoring not only the river and the confluences, but also these places where these books were born.
Yes.
And so I have Agua Santa by Pat Mora mentioned there, and you mentioned Canicula by Norma Cantú, who's one of my mentors.
Yes.
I have With His Pistol in His Hand, Américo Paredes. I live here close to Bensville now.
Yeah.
In the Gathering of Silence is a book by... Why am I blanking out here? Sorry. Levi Romero.
Oh, sorry. Levi, yeah.
Levi Romero.
Yes.
And so I had to go up further north on the river, and Bless Me, Ultima, of course. Up higher in the river. And then Ceremony by Leslie Marmon Silco. Yeah. I used to live near Gallup, New Mexico, which is in between, Gallup, New Mexico, and then there's Laguna Pueblo, where Leslie Marmon Silco is from, and then there's Albuquerque on I-40.
Right.
And when I read that book, it just blew me away. And so the poem was really just, you know, I was writing about all these confluences, but I was also remembering the people who wrote these books near these places in the river and the confluences of the river.
you're talking about naming names, you know, I mean, these are all names of specific locations, like you're talking about here, you know, across the Southwest for the most part, Colorado, Texas, New Mexico, Arizona. And yet, like, placed on this page in a sort of, in a very, you know, deliberate poetic form, you really get to kind of savor each one of the places, the spaces that they inhabit. Like, you know, it really is, it's just a beautiful poem, and I really appreciated it. But, you know, one of the things is just to kind of give our listeners some context, you know, how would you describe the book yourself?
Yes. Well, I would describe the book as starting in El Paso. And the reason why is my first book, Solstice, a lot of it was about El Paso. And I had moved there in the year 2000 to sort of learn more about my family history. I'm originally from Southern California. Mm-hmm. And my mom would tell me all these amazing stories about Isleta, where she grew up and where my family lived for hundreds of years,
right,
even before the Treaty of Guadalupe Hidalgo.
Wow.
And so I moved eventually to that neighborhood when I was living in El Paso, and I just really loved it. So I have in my first book poems about that place.
Mm-hmm.
And I was working at UTEP and as a lecturer, and I needed a better job.
Right.
And so I applied to jobs all over the country, and I was very fortunate to be able to stay on the borderlands in Gloria Andaldúa's land here,
yeah,
in El Valle.
El Valle.
And so it was really hard for me to leave El Paso. So it was,
yeah,
still in my heart. It still always will be.
Yes.
I thought I was going to die there.
Yeah, yeah.
Real dramatic.
Yeah, no, yeah.
But then when I moved here to El Valle, I learned even so much more about the borderlands, and it's just been such a blessing.
Yeah.
And so when I first moved here, I was really amazed that I could see the river, and the river was a different color. It is a different color than it is in El Paso. In El Paso, you know, it's a little muddier, and
right,
here it's after it's been refed by some other sources and rivers and confluences, it's kind of greenish.
Wow.
And so when, wow, I got here, I was like, there's no fence here. It's so beautiful. You can see the river.
Yeah.
In El Paso, there's always been,
right,
some sort of fences.
Yeah.
And so I just, a friend told me, you've gone down river, and that was really profound to me.
Mm.
So I live in New Mexico, then I live in El Paso, and then now I'm living here.
Wow.
And so it just seemed like a really neat way to organize a book, even,
yes,
though the book isn't like organized in that way. It's more organic.
Sure.
I really thought about how, you know, all these places mean something to me.
Yes.
And so while a lot of the book is about El Valle, it is influenced by all the different places that I lived and the literature that I've read and my extreme love for the Southwest and the borderlands. And so I don't know if that answers your question or not. But,
no, it does. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, that's, and you get that sense. I think that's what I was trying to allude to earlier, is that the book is very multi-layered, and you get that sense. And you do it in such a sort of short amount of space and time, you know, in the book. And you do that wonderfully. And that's how you – I think that's the mark of – that's when you know an author has really, you know, labored over the work, when you can get that kind of depth and richness in a short amount of space, you know, in 95 pages, you know, I mean, to be exact, or 96 pages, you know. It's incredible. So – and one of the other things that you touched on that I wanted to ask you about is, you know, as I was reading this at some point, like, I want to say probably into the, gosh, I think even at the very first poem, but certainly by like the third poem, I was going, is this a book of like eco-poetics? You know, I was like, I loved it. I loved it for that reason. And I suddenly, it turned a whole corner for me, and I started to read it almost with one eye in a sort of eco-poetics lens and the other one, you know, borderlands experience. And so I read it that way. And, you know, would you consider that, I guess, would this book kind of fall into the category for you of like maybe eco-poetics or ecology-based poems? Or?
Yeah, I think so. And and it was very organic. It wasn't like I sat down and said, I'm going to write a book that falls into the category of eco-poetics or anything like that. But I think that environmental justice is really important to me in the context of, you know, larger social justice issues. So I have some poems in the book about the border wall coming to El Valle. Like I said, when I first moved here, there was no border wall, and then I witnessed it being built, and it was really devastating and heartbreaking. And of course, the wall isn't in every location. You can still see the river, but it was really heartbreaking.
Yeah.
And I hope that there isn't more to come.
Right.
So it was sort of like a natural thing that happened.
Right.
And also here in El Valle, about 90% of the monte, or the brushland, has been eradicated in the past, I would say, over 100 years in the 20th century. And so the monte here is really beautiful, you know, mesquite, nopales, beautiful trees, you know, beautiful wildlife. And there's only 10% left. And I found those spaces when I first moved here to be really healing spaces for me.
Right.
If I was having like personal stress in my life or from my job or from the news on TV, I would go and take a lot of walks in the Monte and the wildlife refuges. And I just felt really healed in those spaces.
Yeah.
And so the book is a lot about the images that I saw of the butterflies and the beauty of it, but also like not divorcing it from social justice issues, the border wall, toxins that are arriving that have always been here,
right.
The violence that has happened in this region. And so, I think you can call it eco-poetics.
I mean, you can call it a lot of things for sure. I think it falls under many different categories, you know, and in fact defies, I think it defies categories, which I think that's what I love about it most. It's, to me, it just defies all categories, you know.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. To me, it's beautiful in that way, and it's important in that way too, I think. Why don't we have you share a poem from the book?
Okay. You know, since you're talking about the eco-poetics, maybe I'll read one, just an excerpt because it's quite long.
Okay.
That kind of talks about some of what you are mentioning.
Beautiful.
So, this is from a book, a poem called El Paso, El Valle, and the first half is about El Paso. But I'm going to read the ending, which is about El Valle here in the Rio Grande Valley.
Okay, cool.
And it's just the ending of it.
Great.
I make reference to Hargill, Texas, where Gloria Anzaldúa is from. Mm-hmm. I mean, she has deceased, but she was from Hargill.
Right.
So, okay. Hargill, where the living horse told about the deceased one in Gloria's poem, where cruel knives gleam in the seeming blindness of night, and neighbors whisper atrocities instead of shouting them. El Valle of yellow Kiskadees and green-blue river. El Valle, where Agent Orange was born in a factory planted in the barrio, DDT and arsenic still in the soil and blood. El Valle, where I'm learning how to love, astonished. El Valle, a brand new border wall, concrete, rebar, comfort for those who have never touched this river water. El Valle, where we are witnesses with all the senses, sometimes the words swallowed in helicopters, hurricanes. El Valle, of green parakeets on 10th Street, bobcats and ghosts of ocelots in the Monte by Boca Chica, where the river cools blue herons, children, and fisherwomen and men as it joins the Gulf. Spring arrives anytime there's a splash of rain with sun and still a pronounced flowering in February, March. Cacti blooming fuchsia flowers near saltwater and Texas tortoise so ancient at Laguna Atascosa walking in wind as we walk in wind. In spring, thinking about desire, Celia Cruz and female and male cardinals in winter. El Valle, where my toronjas are organic, and the big red ants consume every last peach-white bit of pulp when stray beautiful ones fall to dirt, already with a suck hole for the birds. El Valle, where each toronja in my backyard is a miracle of life. El Valle, where I'm teachable, teachable by people like you who live their lives in order to love. Because this is why many of us live our lives. But we don't stop working to notice. Pero yo ya no soy yo, ni mi casa es ya mi casa. En El Paso, en El Valle, everywhere. So the part that I quoted in Spanish is García Lorca.
We are speaking with the poet Emmy Perez about her collection, her new collection of poetry, With the River on Our Face, which is out with the University of Arizona Press, one of my personal favorite presses for a variety of reasons, and a very influential press also. How did you get first interested in the environmental sort of area? You know, I mean, you came from, like you said, Southern California, which, you know, isn't necessarily pinned to any kind of environment. I mean, you know, typically not you don't think of Southern California and you think of, you know, outdoors, the great outdoors, you know. What got you invited?
Right.
What got you interested in that in the first place? How'd you get interested?
You know, it's really interesting because it wasn't something overt. I think that, you know, my family, when we certainly got to a stage in our lives where my parents had a little bit more money,
right.
Because my mom, you know, she was a homemaker, and then she went back to school and she got her degree, and then she started teaching, and, you know, so we were really working class, and then suddenly we started to become like lower middle class, and we had more money, and
right.
So we were able to start going on vacations. you know, we always went on vacation to see my grandparents and things like that. But this time we were going, and my parents would take us to national parks.
Wow.
And so we went to Sequoia National Park. We went to Yosemite.
Wow.
Eventually they took us to Yellowstone National Park. And I still remember being a tween at Yellowstone or one of those places and being really like, you know, annoyed that we had to stop and look at the animals. And I was like rolling my eyes and I, you know, hormones.
Totally. Yes, I do know.
But I just really think that all of those experiences really helped me to appreciate nature. And I thank them today for that. And, you know, ever since then, I've always enjoyed going to national parks, state parks, wildlife refuges, and I think that's where it began.
Yeah, I feel the same way too, you know, and it's kind of one of those things. It started for me early on. My parents were migrant farm workers, and when we traveled a lot, they would make it a point to stop at sort of these really natural parks, or, you know, and Yellowstone was one of the places. They would go to Wyoming and to do the sugar beet like harvest out there, and then we would stop at Yellowstone on the way and, you know, see like the moose on the side of the highway. And those kind of things really had a big influence on me, but I didn't know that, right? They'd stay dormant for years throughout all of my, like, you know, early, from my teens into my early 20s. And then it's not until, actually it wasn't until I had children, and it wasn't until I also moved to Colorado that all of that sort of reemerged in my life again. And I realized how important those things were to not just myself, but to pass those on to my own children. I know you, and I would imagine you feel the same way because you're a mother as well.
Yes, yeah. And I do try to take my kids into these spaces as well. Mm-hmm. And we've gone camping maybe once or twice, and we need to do that more.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think it's important to pass that on to the kids.
You know, your book, as I was reading it too, it brought to mind some other books by, you know, even contemporary writers. I thought of Maria Melendez's poetry, some of her work. Also, one of my teachers, Jack Collum, he does wonderful, you know, and in fact, I kept thinking more about Jack Collum's work as I was reading your book, because he kind of has this thing where he explores and examines nature and ecology, but he does it in a way that's like, it's not some other poetics. It's actually a part of everything. It's, you know, it's within what we do. And I got that same sensibility in your work. It wasn't like you were forcing nature to be in your poetry. It was just a part of, you know, your surroundings. It's a part of being a poet in the world or a human being in the world, you know. And I wanted to ask you, do you feel like your book is in conversation with other books out there? And if so, which ones?
Oh, definitely. I'm unfamiliar with your teacher's work. I need to look him up.
Oh, Jack Collum.
Thank you for mentioning it.
Absolutely.
Maria Melendez is definitely one of my influences. She's a really beautiful poet, and I love her writing.
Yeah, me too.
And I have for many years. In fact, in one of the poems, I think it's the very last poem in the collection, I quote her. I have a quote, "A river killed a man I loved, and I love that river still."
Oh, I love
and
it.
She's,
yes.
Wow, just amazing, right?
Yeah, she's amazing.
And so she definitely influences me. When I was living in El Paso, I met Cheryl Luna, and Cheryl is a good friend, and, you know, I just love her writing to pieces. She's an amazing writer.
She is, it's true.
And I love Mary Oliver's work. I love one of my mentors, Sandra McPherson.
Mm-hmm.
She's a beautiful writer as well. You know, a lot of Native American poets, Ofelia Cepeda, Joy Harjo, I love their writing so much. Yeah, and I think that all of them sort of incorporate, you know, the larger world beyond just the poetry of flowers or the tree-hugging poems.
Right,
you know,
right.
More than just that.
Exactly. Exactly. And, you know, like delving back into the poems themselves, you know, I know that, I mean, a large portion of the poems also deal with, I mean, we've been talking mostly about the sort of, you know, nature side of it, but they also deal quite a bit with the politics around immigration and borders and life along the borderlands. And I think specifically of your poem, Laredo Riviera, I think it's called. And you ask, what is it to love in the viewing distance of night vision and goggles? What is it to love within viewing distance of night vision and goggles? And then later you have a poem, and I think you're driving down a back road, and you get somewhere maybe in the Rio Grande Valley there, and you get pulled over by immigration, and they ask you how you got onto the back road, and then your reply is totally unexpected. You tell them it was on the world birding map. You know, I was expecting some kind of, like, you know, quick-witted political reply or some response or something, and you're like, it was on the world birding map. Which is the best best response because it says so much about these sort of man-made delineations that we all come up with, and Mother Nature just don't give an F about it. You know what I mean? Crosses all those boundaries, you know? So tell me about that experience, but also just how you, you know, how you choose and select your experiences of life on the border and turn them into these poems.
Well, beginning with Laredo Riviera, I think I sort of make fun of myself or the persona in the book because, you know, a lot of these poems are influenced by my life, but sometimes I fictionalize things for poetry's sake.
Right.
And so in the Laredo Riviera, I think I kind of make fun of myself or the character or the persona a little bit because, you know, making fun of the privileges that mm-hmm. I have mm-hmm. being a tourist, you know, mm-hmm. in some of these places. And also in the long poem, Rio Grande Bravo, the narrator yes. talks about, like, drinking beer
right.
And right there on the river. And, of course, there's people crossing and suffering every day. So, but when I get to the other poem that you mentioned, Something Awakens and Killed Off Each Time a Teacher Speaks.
Yes.
That's the one. And that is based on a true experience. And, you know, I was visiting this really beautiful part of the river, and the reason why I knew about it was because it was on the world birding map. And it really was. So beautiful, and the wall isn't there yet. And I was pulled over, and there were three Border Patrol agents. And when I looked in my rearview mirror, I saw one of them that was behind me fiddling, you know, in the car. Mm. And you know, I thought he was grabbing his gun. I mean, that's what it seemed like to me.
Right.
And then he came up, and I didn't know that there were two others that, you know, I guess he had called in the troops, and so others had come. And, you know, they were really young Latino men. And I couldn't help but think how much they reminded me of the young people that I had taught in the juvenile detention center. Mm. And when I was in El Paso, I taught in one of the juvenile detention centers in a boot camp situation. It was military style. And, you know, the Border Patrol is so much like the military in many ways.
Yeah.
And so I couldn't help but think, like, these young men are interrogating me, but I could be their tía, or I could be their teacher, or, you know, and I'm not doing anything wrong, but I think that I'm, you know, waiting here for the drug deal to come across the river, or, you know, that's the feeling that I got. But the feeling, too, that these men had guns was really terrifying.
It is.
And I was revising the poem after the Sandra Bland incident and tragedy. And so when I was writing, this is a revision. And so there's an earlier version on it online. I sent those to review, and now the poem's different. So I was really thinking more about, you know, what is it like to be a person of color, to be stopped by people with guns?
So, you know, how do you decide that these become poems? How do you decide that these experiences are what become the poem? Is it just a process of, like, you know, you write down your experiences because you keep a journal or something, and then they eventually become a poem? How does that work for you?
I think that a lot of it is really related to what Gloria Anzaldúa says in Borderlands, La Frontera. And at one point she says that writing for her is like removing a cactus needle embedded in flesh. And for me, you know, I do take tons of notes and, you know, have diaries and everything.
Sure.
But they all don't become poems, like you say. And it's really the ones where I feel like this outburst of emotion, either if it's a love poem, it could be something positive, like all this love that I have, or it could be something that I need to remove the needle from the flesh. Mm. And so I think a lot of the poems come from both of those places, like extreme happiness or extreme sadness.
Yeah.
And those are the ones where I feel the energy and the impetus to write the poems.
Your book, it really kind of, the whole book actually kind of reminded me of the what happened here in El Paso with the Chamizal, where the river, the Chamizal Park, where the river, where the Rio Grande basically said, you know, yeah, you guys all have your border line drawn, but I'm going to go ahead and just shift that over a little bit. And then Mother Nature sort of, you know, takes over, you know, how, or like how, or even another sort of image that comes to mind is how sunflower seed pods or dandelion pods easily drift across these border fences. And, you know, in some way, I think, you know, of how, you know, Mother Nature erases a lot of our own politics, our own ideas, our own lines. And to me, your entire book speaks to that idea for me. And I just, it was a really enjoyable read. And I'd love it for you, if you would mind taking us out with one more poem from your book.
Thank you so much, Tim. I really appreciate your comments.
Sure.
I'll end with a shorter poem than the last one I read, and it's towards the end of the book. So the book has a lot of love poems in addition to poems of witness.
Mm-hmm.
And so this poem towards the end is a little bit more cynical about love. But then you go outside, and it's so beautiful. And so you're like, why is this beautiful place calling me back to love?
Yeah.
So this is called Staying in the Flood. Why the Tom sprain the screen window? Why flood water left over from Hurricane Alex? A spring after last summer, weed seeds sprouting downriver. Why the woodpeckers off and on wing paws causing vertigo? Why confuse herons with egrets? Atlan, the land of white herons. Why the sap stains like accidents? Why the border patrol woman in a blue truck with camper big enough to haul livestock? Why the anacawita flowers? Why one giant swallowtail butterfly? Why the debris of retama flowers gathering on asphalt edges like the path of hair under your belly button or a path of marigold petals welcoming the dead home? And why the busted up nopals like a bullet target or a just married sign in April, strung with tecate cans hitched to an El Camino? Why is it still blooming yellow roses?
And you are listening to Emmy Perez, poet Emmy Perez, who is reading from her new collection of poetry, With the River on Our Face. It's out with University of Arizona Press. And Emmy, before I let you go, actually, I want to ask you one more question. If your book is to have any one point, what is the point of it? You know, what would you hope readers take away from your book?
I hope they take away from the book that the border is a real place. You know, we hear all this rhetoric about needing more walls, and I hope that they know that it's a real place.
Mm.
And I hope that they take away from it that that we need to have more love in the world instead of hate.
And I imagine that's probably what you're teaching, because I know you're a professor down there in El Valle at the University of Texas Rio Grande Valley. So I imagine that that's the benefit of what your students are reaping, having you as a teacher there.
Thank you so much, Tim. That's so nice of you.
Absolutely.
Thank you. And congratulations to you on the acceptance of your new book. I'm really looking forward to it. Congratulations.
Oh, hey, thank you so much. I look forward to doing another reading with you soon.
Yeah, you need to come to El Valle.